Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a minute and a half past the hour of this, the 13th day of December 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and participate in the merrymaking, in the madcap multimedia extravaganza, the zany world of The Horn chat room. Yes, indeed. It's free. It's easy. All you got to do is go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and bang, there you are. You'll be greeted by Anatole, Laborman, VT Plum, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who finds it difficult, even as a third stage guild navigator, he finds it difficult to fold space when it's raining there in Northern California. Thus, this evening, this afternoon, for him, space remains unfolded. Yes. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is a listener-supported program. We try to keep things going by raising the incredibly reasonable sum of $200 per evening. That's not even $100 per hour. And let's see. 3 hours, $200. I can't do it. The ciphering's not, no. Mm-mm. And I feel so dirty when I resort to the calculator. You know what I mean? Yeah. We try to raise $200 per evening, every day. And this evening is no different. We actually, through the kind offices of a small handful of people, and particularly Fab, we made our fundraising goal yesterday evening. Thank you very kindly, one and all. Oh, great. okay, so no, it's not $100 per hour. It's $66.66 per hour that we try to raise. Yes. How appropriate, I suppose. Today is, of course, okay, yeah. Everybody else who doesn't feel dirty using their calculator or maybe has a better ciphering brain than me is emailing $66.66 per hour, Bob. I never thought of it in precisely those terms, but hey, maybe it's another way of pointing out just how inexpensive this program is. Can you imagine? No, of course not. But that's, and if you would like to help keep the program going, I encourage you to run by HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on the Contribute tab, and as a reminder, between tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday, an offer remains on the table, courtesy of our dear friend Joan in Tallahassee, to double the first month's contribution of every new subscriber. And the way you do that is you go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you click on Contribute, you check the little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, and bang, set it and forget it. And in turn, if you do it before before midnight your time on Thursday, Joan will double your first month's subscription contribution. Thank you, Joan. Thank you very, very kindly. Because, you know, we're still trying to get up past 100 contributors on a month, 100 subscribers. And that'll be a great day by itself. It'll be an even greater day if we ever get to 400. But there we go. So, what next? What next? Well, it is Titanic Tuesday. You might recall that Titanic Tuesday, the title, comes from something that happened, yea, verily, many years ago when our buddy Jim over in Beckley heard a morning right-wing broadcast by the most profound monotone in southern West Virginia, who took a call that day from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, and responded to the question, "Steve, how's come it is, you reckon, that they is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowheres near the beach." To which Steve responded, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Mm-hmm. Titanic plates. And thus was born Titanic Tuesday as a celebration of the right-wing intellect that says things like, "What? There's an iceberg in front of us. Full steam ahead." Yeah. Titanic plates. Still no word on the Titanic pizza cutter. Nope. No word at all. So that's what we do here. Every Titanic Tuesday, we celebrate disastrous right-wing, for lack of a better term, intellect. And along those lines, good to know, Ron and Raleigh, Ron in the far frozen north will be with us this evening. I don't know about Ron and Raleigh. If he is, he'll send us an email and let me know. Ron in the far frozen north will be with us this evening. He said, I found myself lumbered with a nigh impossible deadline for tomorrow, so I scrubbed my plans to head out tonight. Instead, I'll be working on a tricked-out little laptop and communicating with Illuminati headquarters for a couple of hours, whilst listening to my evening dose of edification via TuneIn. I'll snipe in your ear as I deem necessary. I look forward to the sniping. An inquiry and food for thought. Your take on this would be valuable. Note coming from Jan in Australia. Democratic Underground has posted a list of email addresses for all the presidential electors, calling for an email bomb. Let's not call it that. Calling for an email bomb of those listed as Republican. In your opinion, would it be wise or unwise to partake? On the one hand, getting their attention en masse might keep them thinking, but on the other, might cause them to stubbornly dig in. Hard to say? Oh my God, Bob, I need to get off this seesaw. Up and down. Today I'm back down. Actually woke up crying, seriously, in tears. Graham was making coffee. He said, "Brace yourself. That stomach pain we're all getting all the time clenched at my guts. What? What is it? Just tell me." He handed me a cup and said, "Rick Perry, Department of Energy." Oops. "Oh, Bob, is this a mass collective hallucination? It's got to be. This cannot be real." Yeah, it is real, Jen. And yeah, it really is Rick Perry. Oops. Mm-hmm. Rick Perry, who couldn't even remember the name of the Department of Energy, is now going to run it. Bully for us. and I can't remember the name of the guy who just got named as Interior Secretary. The representative something. Yeah. But he's a climate change denier and doesn't think much of the government actually holding land in the name of we the people of the United States. And of course, yes, we went all the way today, and it is Rex Tillerson. It's Rex Tillerson for Secretary of State. Putin collaborator. Russian oil deal maker. And worm in the apple barrel. But he's not just anybody. No. He's not just any oil executive, oil company thug. No. Rex Tillerson, it turns out. Do you remember a couple of years back when some folks wanted to frack the living bejesus? Out of a Dallas neighborhood. You remember that? And people stepped up and said, no, you can't. Don't want it. Don't want no fracking. Don't want my property values lowered. Well, the guy who said he didn't want his property values hurt by the construction of a water tower near his home that would be used to pump precious water into fracking wells was none other than Rex Tillerson. Back in February 2014, almost 2 years ago, Rex Tillerson joined a lawsuit to stop construction of a water tower near his home that would be used in the fracking process to drill for oil or gas. Tillerson showed up at a town council meeting in Bartonville, Texas, which, while it just sounds like is another burb in Texas, ain't. Right? No. Bartonville, Texas is a wealthy little suburb of Dallas, wherein resides a Russian collaborator, Rex Tillerson, who did not want, no siree, no how, no way, did not want a water tower for fracking fluid anywhere near his lovely home. According to the lawsuit papers, the water tower project would have created a noise nuisance and traffic hazards because trucks would be needed to haul and pump the water, and there would be all those nasty trucks. The water tower would have been 15 stories tall. And it's, it would have sat, the property for the tower would have sat adjacent to the 83-acre Horsey Ranch and farm. And not very far at all from the 18-acre homestead site of Rex Tillerson. Which, you know, apart from being a monumental case of just jumping hypocrisy, is reminiscent of the fact that Benito Cheeto tweeted, the EPA kept manufacturing plants from locating in the United States because of the lengthy permit approval process for such plants. And he, Trump, by God, was going to put an end to that. Somebody wants to build a plant, we're just going to let them build a plant. Because Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, amen. Mm-hmm. So, I, for one, hope that maybe ExxonMobil will decide it wants to put an oil refinery right fucking next to Mar-a-Lago. Of course, that won't happen because, well, to the same degree that Rex Tillerson doesn't want any fracking water towers next to the horse farm and his humble 18-acre homestead. And no poisonous installation will go in next to Mar-a-Lago either. No, it'll go in next to some poor community. Next to some community full of expendable poors. You know, the problem with the poors is that they're so poor and they don't have any political campaign money to donate, so fuck them, right? Meanwhile, in regard to Jen's query about emailing the Republican electors, people generally don't like it when their email box gets filled with what they deem to be spam. I mean, my email here is for the program. It's for the purpose of soliciting commentary. I try to respond to as much of it as I possibly can, assuming that it itself is not, you know, spam. And there's not much, there's never any point in letting right-wingers time vampire you, steal your precious time on this lovely little blue-green merry-go-round zipping along through the universe. No. And remember, you don't need all the Republicans to vote against Trump. Just 39 or so. But before you get yourself all worked up, don't be thinking this means Hillary Clinton's going to be president. It doesn't. What we're talking about here is finding some other Republican to be president instead of Trump. Which brings me to a point. I don't often play somebody else's political rant. But in this case, I'm going to break with my own rule. And it's not a rule, for starters. Anyway, sorry, I had to answer a question from Ferg. We're coordinating coordinating work commutes. Jen points out that according to a Salon story, Trump kneecappers are, in fact, already going after the Republican electors, telling them that they, by God, had better vote for Trump in the Electoral College, or else there will be career reprisals. My, that certainly sounds democratic, doesn't it? Almost makes you think they might be a little bit nervous. So it all goes down on December the 19th. Haha. Yeah, good one, Devin. How long till you call Rex Tillerson Tiller the Tower Killer? Well, probably never, because there's that sun on the end. And Tillerson the Tower Killerson, I don't know, might have worked for Dr. Seuss, but it really doesn't get there for me, but still. Meanwhile, ASA says, I was shocked to find out Rex Tillerson is not even a billionaire. He's worth a measly $150 million with about $250 million coming from his Exxon stock when he retires shortly. Who'd have thunk it? Well, you know, I mean, Benito Cheeto likes to go slumming once in a while, right? He probably considers acceding to his Russian master's demands and giving Tillerson a job in the administration as some sort of affirmative action. You know, Rex Tillerson is one of Trump's little urban underachiever, Trump's little urban overachievers. That would have been funny if I could have gotten it out of my mouth in one piece. So I guess I'm gonna take a pass on emailing the Republican electors. I don't see them paying a lot of attention to Democrats anyway, or, you know, decent human beings. Oh, hey, is this a news story? Let me check real quick. Just a moment. Just in case this is breaking news. I suspect it's not. It's not. Never mind. As you were. But anyway, other people's rants. I'm going to share with you, just to save you the trouble of having to track it down, one of the Keith Olbermann rants that I heard earlier today. I'm doing this because it has a specific value to it. And that value is A, to remind people that, well, that we aren't alone in the resistance. And B, that there are people who take what is happening here every bit as seriously as we do, and who recognize fascism as fascism. And so, and with particular reference to a phrase that is used in this monologue by Keith Olbermann. So take it away, Keith. Working.
We are at war with Russia. Or perhaps more correctly, we have lost a war with Russia without a battle. We are no longer a sovereign nation. We are no longer a democracy. The traitorous indifference of the Republican Party and Donald John Trump.
Oh, it's going to be one of those evenings, isn't it?
A man who, to borrow a phrase from another December long ago, will live in infamy. In 5 weeks' time, unless desperate measures are taken, we will hand over the government to a man who lost the popular vote by more than Woodrow Wilson or Jimmy Carter won it. A man whom the Russians wanted to run our country for them. A man whom the Russians got to run our country for them. A man for whom the Russians interfered with our elections.
One point of order. I disagree that any measures taken to stop the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini from entering the White House would be desperate. Desperate measures, Olbermann says. I largely agree with the thrust of his argument, but the measures that we're talking about are not desperate because, by definition, they are contained within the Constitution. So they are therefore constitutional measures put in place to prevent the likes of a Donald J. Trump billionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane and a bunch of golf courses, but is functionally broke, from becoming president. They are constitutional measures. Impeachment itself is not an act of desperation. It is the responsible act of a responsible deliberative legislative body, to wit, the Congress. The Electoral College refusing to allow a man who did not win the popular vote to assume the presidency, again, is not a desperate measure, but rather a constitutional remedy for a situation that has gone sideways. A remedy for a situation which poses grave and enduring risks to the constitutional government itself. Because in both the case of the Electoral College and impeachment, those measures are there specifically to protect the Constitution and our form of self-governance. Right? And I don't guess, perhaps not by definition alone, but are therefore not desperate, but rather, I would argue, responsible.
Would be described as an act of war. And in this country, we have conceded defeat. Some experts, John Kasich's strategist, John Weaver for one, have compared this to Pearl Harbor. Even the hard right ex-Congressman Joe Walsh says Republican silence will be tantamount to treason. Some others, too, have proved courageous. Trump, self-destructive to the last, issued a childish statement mocking the CIA, but as Tim Dickinson of Rolling Stone noted, not denying anything. But the vast majority of Republicans have said nothing, and the vast majority of Democrats have said nothing, and the vast majority of the media has said nothing of substance, and the president has said nothing close to enough. The CIA and FBI and Homeland Security, the institutions whose interest in freedom we on the left most frequently distrust, they have said something. They said it first to congressional and Senate Republicans in September. Dire warnings, warnings that Mitch McConnell and other Republicans reportedly buried, warnings that the Russians, using computer hacking and perhaps other means, were not merely trying to discredit the election, but to achieve the specific outcome of electing their man Trump. And finally, at the very last hour, some of those who did those briefings and some of those who received those briefings leaked the details to the New York Times, the Washington Post, CBS News, Reuters, in a torrent of anguished honesty. They said something. They said something as the president-not-elect began to veer towards appointing as Secretary of State, as our diplomatic face to the world, the CEO of Exxon, who 4 years ago received the Order of Friendship from Vladimir Putin. They said something as the members of the Electoral College prepared to gather next Monday to finalize this coup. Some, perhaps unaware that almost half the states they represent permit them by law to vote for someone other than the candidate to whom they are pledged, and that only 38 of them need to do so to prevent this coup. They said something as one especially chilling detail in one of the reports sailed by that, quote, the Russians hacked the Republican National Committee's computer systems in addition to their attacks on Democratic organizations, but did not release whatever information they gleaned from the Republican networks. It is a short leap from that conclusion, and it is anything but a conspiracy theory to be wondering if the Russians hacked the RNC and have kept what they found there to make sure Trump and the Republicans obeyed. The President of the United States, who at this rate will be the last freely elected President of the United States, made in his measured way a small gesture last Friday that perhaps opened the door to these horrifying revelations of a coup by an outside power nearly complete. He asked for a full review, but we do not have time for a full review. Barack Obama has twice stood in front of America, in front of the world, in front of history, and said, I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Today is the time for him to do so. He must immediately declassify and release all relevant materials held by the FBI, the CIA, DHS, and the other intelligence and security services, and in the White House, and anywhere else in government. And the Attorney General must immediately appoint a special prosecutor to investigate what Donald Trump knew, and when he knew it, and what, if any, collusive links exist now or existed earlier between the Russian Federation and the Republican National Committee. If Trump does grab power, he can try to dismiss that special prosecutor, but he will at least have to get the courts to sanction him. And most immediately, the intelligence briefing proposed today for the Electoral College, what the CIA and the others know, when they knew it, how much the Trump campaign knew, that must be conducted without delay and without redactions. There are no arguments of security or face-saving or intelligence secrecy or national interest that carry any weight now. How much worse can it get by telling America the unvarnished, unprocessed, unredacted truth about this coup? We are already on the precipice of losing the freedom and independence of the nation. He must tell us so that we may defend ourselves. He must tell the electors of the Electoral College so that, microscopic as the chance may be, they could still prevent this cataclysm. There is no time for a full review or a measured analysis or recommendations to prevent interference in our future elections, because permitting Donald Trump to assume the office of president reduces the chance that we will have any future elections. The nation and all of our freedoms hang by a thread, and the military apparatus of this country is about to be handed over to scum who are beholden to scum, Russian scum. As things are today, January 20th will not be an inauguration, but rather the end of the United States as an independent country. It will not be a peaceful change of power. It will be a usurpation, and the usurper has no validity, no credibility, and no authority under the Constitution. This is a reality that will become the only reality until this country rids itself of Donald John Trump. He is not a president. He is a puppet put in power by Vladimir Putin. And those who ignore these elemental existential facts, Democrats or Republicans, are traitors to this country and will immediately and forever after be held accountable. Resist.
Pretty succinct, right? Well, I mean, the whole thing is moving, and it's well-reasoned. But there was one little part that I just heard it and went, ha! Because we all know that Keith Olbermann is extremely intelligent, is well-read, well-versed. Sorry, more logistics. But anyway, Keith Olbermann is well-read, and he is politically astute. And there's a phrase in here, I mentioned it in conversation on Facebook with Michael and Horst earlier today. One particular phrase, and maybe it's just because I'm read up in this subject as well. But I heard it, and I couldn't help noting it. We're going to go back and check it out again in context for exactly the words in use.
United States, and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Which is another subject for... So is official Washington just going to hand the reins of power over to this madman? And pretend that everything's okay? That in itself is probably the single greatest act of normalization. Pretending that this is just another peaceful transfer of power when all the evidence points toward it being anything but. Anyway, back to that. Back to Keith.
Today is the time for him to do so. He must immediately declassify and release all relevant materials held by the FBI, the CIA, DHS, and the other intelligence and security services, and in the White House, and anywhere else in government. And the Attorney General must immediately appoint a special prosecutor to investigate what Donald Trump knew and when he knew it, and what, if any, collusive links exist now or existed earlier between the Russian Federation and the Republican National Committee. If Trump does grab power, he can try to dismiss that special prosecutor, but he will at least have to get the courts to sanction him. And most immediately, the intelligence briefing proposed today for the Electoral College, what the CIA and the others know, when they knew it, how much the Trump campaign knew, that must be conducted without delay and without redactions. There are no arguments of security or face-saving or intelligence secrecy or national interest that carry any weight now. How much worse can it get by telling America the unvarnished, unprocessed, unredacted truth about this coup? We are already on the precipice of losing the freedom and independence of the nation. He must tell us so that we may defend ourselves. He must tell the electors of the Electoral College so that, microscopic as the chance may be, they could still prevent this cataclysm. There is no time for a full review or a measured analysis or recommendations to prevent interference in our future elections, because permitting Donald Trump to assume the office of president reduces the chance that we will have any future elections. The nation and all of our freedoms hang by a thread.
There it is. The nation and all of our freedoms hang by a thread. Okay, so what I'm about to say may be a little bit like playing Beatles and Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd albums backwards, you know, back when you could do that on vinyl, and you still can. Did you know that vinyl sales outpaced digital downloads in the UK last month? Stunning, right? Regardless, back in 1843, May of 1843, as a matter of fact, in a little place called Nauvoo, Illinois, a religious hustler by the name of Joseph Smith was said, according to a diary of entry made by one John Roberts of Paradise, Utah, in 1902. Back in 1843, Joseph Smith was said to have given what has now come to be known as the White Horse Prophecy. Among other things, Joseph Smith said, "The Mormons will go to the Rocky Mountains. It will be a great and mighty people established there, which I will call the White Horse of Peace and Safety. I shall never go there," Joseph Smith continued. But then he said this. you will see the Constitution of the United States almost destroyed. It will hang like a thread, as fine as a silk fiber. I love the Constitution. It was made by the inspiration of God, and it will be preserved and saved by the efforts of the White Horse and by the Red Horse, who will combine in its defense. Mm-hmm. According to John Roberts in 1902, Smith went on to predict numerous wars among Great Britain, France, Russia, China, etc. Yada, 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 yada. But that thing, when the Constitution of the United States almost destroyed, will hang like a thread as fine as silk fiber. When I heard Keith Olbermann use that phrase, hangs by a thread, I couldn't help wondering. And since I don't have Keith's phone number, and he gets far too many tweets to respond to the likes of me, was that on his mind? Is that a sort of cryptic suggestion to the electors that maybe they might want to hand us Bishop Willard Romney instead of Trump? And here's a question for you. Would Bishop Willard Romney be better than Trump? I don't have an answer. I do have an answer. My initial gut response is yes. Because at least Bishop Willard Romney has some casual attachment to the United States of America. At least Bishop Willard Romney, if he's in hock to anybody, is in hock to mostly people in the United States. But Donald Trump is in hock to Russian oligarch banks, not to mention Chinese authoritarian fascist banks, and is eminently controllable as a result thereof. It's at least worthy of our... what are we going to do between now and the 19th of December? That's 6 days. We talk about the Electoral College, but what outcome do you want once you understand that one of those possible outcomes is not Hillary? Some people, but not all, may have come to the realization that it would have been far better to have had Hillary. The devil! In the White House, but all of them have not. I still see posts from fawning goofballs who say things like, this is just sour grapes on Hillary's part. Yeah. Really? Saw it today. Saw an accusation that Hillary Clinton actually engineered and that the hacking was at her behest. No, really. And this was, this wasn't a right-wing troll. This was a left-wing troll. Hillary through the offices of the Clinton Foundation. Look, wait a minute. The Clinton Foundation? The Clinton Foundation actually arm-twisted the Russians into using the institutional powers of their government to hack the DNC and the RNC. And then Hillary Clinton released, caused the Russians to release the DNC hacks to WikiLeaks, but sit on the RNC hacks. It's out there. I don't know what it is, and I'll say it again. I honest to Jesus don't know what it is that makes the members of the I don't even know how to refer to them now. That makes some people who call themselves progressives get all squishy over a guy who orders the murder of journalists, who winks at thugs who go and stomp and beat and maim gay people, who has designs on the national sovereignty of his neighbors, and for whom a United States, unwilling to honor its NATO treaty obligations, is the best means by which to make sure that there's no credible opposition when the tanks roll into Estonia, into Latvia, into Ukraine. So, I don't understand them. I don't purport to understand them. I will not sit here on this program and tell you how to understand them, unless it is simply to say that, because when you see a so-called left, what left, response to the Russian hacking that is anything but a discussion of the issue. When you see some member of the far left, responding to the hacking news by saying Hillary, then you know that they're just gone. Just gone. Orbiting their own private planet. Kind of like Kolob. But it's interesting, at the very least, that phrase, hangs by a thread, was put out there. I mean, and it's sort of like the theory that I put forward the other day, that if only Barack Obama and Joe Biden would step down simultaneously, we could get a real interesting show out of that by making Paul Ryan president of the United States in advance of the Electoral College vote. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Electoral College vote could still wind up being a screw-up. It could you realize the Electoral College could still wind up with Donald Trump as president. You know, when it gets thrown to the House. Because they could, the House could choose Donald Trump. And then it would be constitutionally accomplished. Wouldn't they feel real silly if they found themselves needing to impeach him later? We want to go down that road? I don't know. I'm not the answer guy. I'm the question guy. Note coming in. Oh, by the way, yes. Ron and Raleigh checked in. Ron and Raleigh in the chilly house. Signed Ron in. Well, you know. Under the subject line, Lafayette, I have arrived. Another Beverly Hillbillies fan. So it would be interesting to know if Keith Olbermann used that phrase deliberately, but I don't know that we can know. Ron in the far frozen north says, Keith Olbermann is brilliant and delivers great intelligence to his listeners, who can be numbered with only one comma. This Electoral College discussion is the news equivalent of vaporware. There's no there, folks. Jumping on this bandwagon is equivalent to doubling down time after time at the blackjack table. Rule 1, never take a piss beneath a helicopter. Rule 2, never drink downstream from a cattle crossing. Rule 3, Cervantes wrote a little book about tilting at windmills. Listen to the message. The bottom line, Twitler was elected by stupid people. A stupid person is a person who causes losses to another person or to a group of persons while himself deriving no gain and even possibly incurring losses himself. Twitler. I like that. Hair Twitler. H-A-I-R Twitler. Hair Twitler. Oh, yeah. Come on. Yeah, there's some cowbell involved with that. Good rules. Good rules to live by. And maybe an observation regarding said stupid people. Because it's hard to get past the fact that, as Keith Olbermann noted, Hillary Clinton's popular vote total over Donald Trump is larger than the margin by which Jimmy Carter beat Gerald Ford and became president. Or, you know, Woodrow Wilson. I know. Ron continues and says, it may make us feel courageous to battle against impossible odds, but in this case, we should assume Twitler is going to assume office. Our mission should be to make the experience as frustrating, humiliating, and unproductive as possible. I would add into that to... by the way, there's an addendum to the Frozen North rules. Rule 4, stupid people usually don't know they're stupid. Which kind of applies to Trump himself, doesn't it? He doesn't know what he doesn't know. And he doesn't know that he doesn't know that he doesn't know. Because he's incurious and ignorant. And possibly even stupid. Right. Oh, quick update. The Secretary of Interior nominee. Well, it'll load in a minute. No. It wasn't Secretary of the Interior I was thinking about. It's somebody else, not Kathy McMorris Rogers. She's old news now. There's another one out there now. Ryan Zinke. There we go. Thank you, Steve in New York. Trump taps Montana Congressman Ryan Zinke as Interior Secretary. What happened to Kathy McMorris Rogers? We hardly knew ye. He's the lone congressman for the state of Montana, so Montana can be counted on to... He put another Republican in that seat. Zinke is a graduate of the University of Oregon, where he studied geology. He was a Navy SEAL from 1986 to 2008. Energy independence gives him a Woody. Sits on the House Natural Resources Committee and the Armed Services Committee. And on the House Natural Resources Committee, he is, of course, a climate change denier. He routinely votes against environmental bills, things like clean water, clean air. Right. He has opposed rules, among other things, that would federal rules that would try to prevent inadvertent releases of methane from oil and gas operations. He said they were unnecessary. Right. Ryan Zinke. Let's see. Uh, Ron in the far frozen north, with permission, Steve in New York would like to add a fifth rule of stupidity. Never fight a land war in Asia. Steve said, had to have a smidgen of levity there somewhere. Well, if that's the case, then we have to add in, never gamble with a Sicilian when the stakes are death. Inconceivable. Let's check in regard to the Electoral College. Gerald points out that while I would agree that the Electoral College is a constitutional measure, you have to consider who the electors are. For instance, ours, West Virginia's, are people like Patrick Morrissey, Ron Foster, Mac Warner, Ann Erling, and, yep, Bill Cole. No, really, Bill Cole. The guy who thinks that working people make an unfairly high wage, and the definition of unfairly high is however much a union job pays. Gerald continues and says, do you honestly think that any of these teabaggers would ever do the right thing? Nah, me neither. Jennifer asks, silk is strong, no? I know spiderweb threads are. Are we hanging on, or like the falling man on 9/11, are we free-falling? I'd take a Romney parachute at the very least. He's not bleached out Aryan orange, and he's an Etch-a-Sketch. Maybe he'd be sobered up and actually try to lead, no? And he who owns a mansion and a yacht and an aeroplane at a wig stand can never take the attention off himself. I like the wig stand part. Wait a minute. Yeah. Then again, Donald Trump is a human wig stand. Ron offers Rule 5B regarding Asian wars. Remember, there's one of you, millions of them. Billions now. Billions and billions. So, was that a whistle to the Mormons that hangs by a thread reference? I don't know. Note coming from David in South Carolina, Stan. USA government, USA corporate media are unwilling to investigate voting systems. There is overwhelming research data that shows how easily the systems can be compromised, and in this election, the official results are virtually impossible to determine to be accurate. The exit polls were accurate. These were not amateur polls. They've been developed over many years by well-educated and experienced professionals. We will not see anything about this, and we will see no investigations. We are such a cluster. Hard to disagree. Near impossible to disagree. Have you been following the stuff that Greg Palast is doing? He has documented at this point in time that, the state of Michigan's attempt to hold an election was pretty much an abject failure. And it would be highly unlikely that one state would be a disaster and another state not. I mean, probably unfair to use this as an example, but consider the fact that if you are in Georgistan, nobody there gets any choice whatsoever. I mean, I walk into the polling place here in West Virginia, they'll ask me paper or plastic. No, they'll actually ask me, they'll ask me if I want to vote on a video game or on a paper ballot with an optical scan ballot, and I always tell them paper. Yeah, right. No such luck in a place like Georgia. Let's see what another member of the fraternity of Steve has to say. Picture subject line, white wedding and so on. Pictures do say 10,000 words after all. Even before the latest revelations, you just knew something was already way too wrong. Funny, I didn't realize the two of them were making America great again. I'd rather see the old hammer and sickle flying again anyway. It makes more sense. As for the CIA and other agencies, and is that what it is? Is that why the I don't know what to call them, the left, it gets so squishy over Big Bad Vladdy Daddy? Do they think he's still he's a commie instead of the pretty obvious authoritarian fascist despot that he is? I don't know. As for the CIA, Steve continues, and other agencies involved in the daily tasks of espionage, this is a whole cloth sort of situation. Either you believe that the world since 1945 is the world of your fathers and grandfathers, or you reject the thing outright. Nothing that is happening now is about the T-idiot or anything he or his handlers say. Neither is the real task of the Electoral College in doubt. They are to exercise caution and judgment in a deliberate decision concerning the election of the U.S. president. Our lives have been determined entirely by the likes of those who work for agencies like the CIA, MI6, and even the KGB. The KGB, for whom, at one point in time, Big Bad Vladdy Daddy was the head spook. Just saying. But that doesn't make him a commie. Tavarich. If the work of the last 70 and more years is to become the soundbite dismissals of the sort preferred by asinine personalities posing as viable presidential candidates, then the old Cold War is and was lost. You got that? I think that one bears a reread. If the work of the last 70 and more years is to become the soundbite dismissals of the sort preferred by asinine personalities posing as viable presidential candidates, then the Cold War is and was lost. That war, a very real one, was won because of superior military power and intelligence. Anyone born after 1945 or so doesn't even associate the term intelligence with anything else but the doings and findings of these various intelligence communities. The advertising you are exposed to, the toys your children play with, the cheap novels you purchase at the checkout counter, these are part and parcel of the reality entailed by a world infested with spies and agents and operatives. Love them or not, the CIA and its awful brotherhood comprise an entity that exists only due to the presumed threat of the present enemy. These players are the fabric of the modern perception not only of danger but of security and peace. Your sons and daughters, fathers and mothers, die in the foreign sand and rubble of illegitimate wars according to the perception of such peace. The world we are constantly exhorted to believe is constantly at threat, too, from enemies both foreign and domestic. If credibility at this level becomes a matter of partisan politics and easy dismissals, even from a lout who doesn't bother to avail himself of the daily intelligence briefings to which he is entitled, then the whole game, such as it exists, is over. The world is as safe as the lies are true. Everyone smashed through the looking glass into cold, hard day. Regards, Steve. In China. There was sort of breaking news earlier from the New York Times. Missed signals and slow responses allowed Russia to mount a broad hacking effort to influence the U.S. election. A Times examination of the Russian cyber attack targeting yada 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 DNC, based on interviews with dozens of players targeted, intelligence officials who investigated it, and Obama administration officials who deliberated over the best response, reveals a series of missteps and a continuing underestimation of the seriousness of the breach. It's just the Russians. Right? The New York Times has a story by Eric Lipton, David E. Sanger, and Scott Shane, The Perfect Weapon, How Russian Cyberpower Invaded the U.S. It is detail-rich. It's gone on for a while. The DNC's fumbling encounter with the FBI meant the best chance to halt the Russian intrusion was lost. The failure to grasp the scope of the attacks undercut efforts to minimize their impact, and the White House's reluctance to respond forcefully meant the Russians have not paid a heavy price for their actions, a decision that could prove critical in deterring future cyber attacks. The low-key approach of the FBI meant that Russian hackers could roam freely through the committee's network for nearly 7 months before top DNC officials were even alerted to the attack and hired cyber experts to protect their systems. In the meantime, the hackers moved on to targets outside the DNC, including Mrs. Clinton's campaign chairman, John Podesta, whose private email account was hacked months later. How about that? The FBI took a powder on being aggressive about this. And then, hey, call me. No, but just ask, just ask the people still afflicted with Clinton, with the obsessive Clinton disorder. They'll tell you, call me. Who cares? Hillary, goddamn it, Goldman Sachs, Brock, oh Jesus. Right. I hope Sparky just sent this to me, and I hope it's a goddamn joke. Report: President-elect Trump considering ex-Fox News boss Roger Ailes for Undersecretary for Public Diplomacy. Public Diplomacy. Undersecretary for. You wearing panties? I hope not. Will he have a trampoline in his office? Yeah, well, I'm sure the CIA can't be trusted, and neither can any of the other intel, and big bad Vladdy Daddy's just a big fluffy Russian bear with sharp claws and long, nasty teeth. No, he's not. He's as sweet as can be. He wouldn't hurt a fly. Because he's big, bad Vladdy Daddy. And all he wants is all of Europe. That's all. Then he'll be happy. I think we've seen this movie. Well, we haven't. A few generations back, they saw this movie. And they tried to make sure this movie would never be screened again. But there are some people who just love the oldies but the goodies. And it's always so exciting when Europe turns itself into an abattoir, isn't it? I know. So let's take a break. We try to raise $66.66 per hour on this program. So far, not so much. Meanwhile, Arthur points out, I can hear elections from my house. Russian accent. I get prompts for which accent. Thank you, Arthur. So it being a Tuesday, this being the 13th day of December 2016, we have the Green News Report on the way, which I always enjoy. Hope you do too. That's on the way. And your calls and other stuff, more stories, because there are more stories. There's more than just Russians out there. Lots more than just Russians. Definitely more than Russians. So if you want to help keep the program going, by all means, go to headonradionetwork.com. Click on the Contribute tab. Fill out all the stuff except for the part where about where you work and what you do and why you do it and who you do it for. We don't care. That was just part of the widget. and get to the next screen. That's where you make your PayPal, credit card, whatever decision. And help us keep this... help us keep this little experiment running. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
By now in New York City, there's snow on the ground. And out in California, the sunshine's falling down. And maybe down in Memphis, Graceland's all in lights. And in Atlanta, Georgia, there's peace on earth tonight. Christmas in Dixie, it's snowing in the pines. Merry Christmas from Dixie Kids are out of school. There's magic in Motown. The city's on the move. In Jackson, Mississippi, to Charlotte, Carolina, and all across the nation, it's a peaceful Christmas time. Christmas in Dixie, it's snowing in the pines. Merry Christmas from Dixie to everyone tonight. And from Fort Payne, Alabama, Merry Christmas tonight.
It's Tuesday, December 13, 2016.
He's much more than a business executive. I mean, he's a world-class player.
Donald Trump picks ExxonMobil CEO for Secretary of State.
She has a record of wanting to drill for more gas and oil and wanting to cut more timber from our public lands.
Potential Interior Department head wants to sell off public lands. Trump transition team's chilling request for names of Energy Department scientists working on climate policy, plus federal aid for Flint, Michigan, finally clears the U.S. Senate.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Welcome to the Trump administration, where climate change is fake and wrestling is real.
I wish I had a good joke here. This is your
Green News Report.
Okay, Desi Doyen, ironically enough, of all of the climate deniers that Donald Trump appears to be putting into his cabinet, the one who isn't a climate denier is actually the head of ExxonMobil.
I know. Weird, isn't it?
Yep.
Yep. Donald Trump has picked Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, the world's largest oil company, for his Secretary of State. Tillerson has close ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin, receiving Russia's Order of Friendship in 2013 after ExxonMobil signed a $300 billion deal to drill for oil in Russia's Arctic. That deal has been on hold due to U.S. economic sanctions against Russia, which are still in place for now. Exxon is also under investigation for spending millions of dollars over decades lying to its shareholders and the public about its own scientific research confirming man-made climate change. Tillerson and Exxon now publicly profess to accept climate science, but in a 2012 interview with the Council on Foreign Relations, Tillerson dismissed the impacts.
We believe those consequences are manageable. Okay, so we will adapt to this. Changes to weather patterns that move crop production areas around, we'll adapt to that. It's an engineering problem, and it has engineering solutions.
Exxon has blocked all action on climate change in practice, pretty much anything to keep the world addicted to Exxon's product.
So he agrees that climate change is real. He agrees that it is changing our climate, but he says no need to worry. We'll just adapt to it.
Pretty much.
Important thing is we keep burning his product.
Exactly. Trump will also reportedly nominate Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington State to head up the Interior Department, which manages the nation's public lands, national parks, and natural resources. McMorris Rogers follows the Republican Party line of denying climate science, advocates for the sale of public lands, and increased drilling, timber harvesting, and other resource extraction. She has a 4% lifetime voting record from the League of Conservation Voters. Senate Democrats have vowed to fight these appointments.
Yeah, good luck with that, Senate Democrats.
Meanwhile, the Trump transition team has sent a disturbing and unusually detailed questionnaire to the Department of Energy, seeking the names of all scientists and career civil servants who attended UN climate talks and worked on climate change initiatives. That's raising concerns that the Trump team is gathering information for people and programs to target for elimination or retaliation. Trump's team also requested information on scientific data sets, websites, and detailed funding of the agency's research on renewable energy innovation.
I got to tell you, that data point is absolutely chilling, McCarthy-esque, and probably even more disturbing than all of these climate deniers in his cabinet.
American scientists are suggesting to their colleagues that they set up duplicate mirror sites for research databases in other countries. All of this comes just days after a Trump transition advisor, Bob Walker, claimed that the new Trump administration will eliminate NASA's climate change research funding because he said climate science research has become so politicized.
Oh, do you think? I wonder who did that.
Finally, some good news. The Obama Interior Department has banned mountaintop removal coal mining along the tops of 600 miles of mountain ridges across four counties in eastern Tennessee.
Good news for now, anyway.
In more good news, in last-minute votes before adjourning for the holidays, the Republican majority in Congress finally allowed passage of a water infrastructure bill that includes funding to help the city of Flint, Michigan, replace its lead-contaminated water system 3 years into the crisis. Senate Republicans also finally agreed to fund health benefits for retired coal miners for another 4 months.
Only 4 months.
Right.
They refused what Democrats had wanted, to extend those benefits to coal miners for another year. Why do the Republicans hate coal miners? Well, GOP war on coal, I guess. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, I'm working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip out. Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down.
Papa slip by.
You know, I don't know anybody to ask, but it would be interesting to ask one of these Trump voting friends of Cole how they feel about the whole healthcare situation. I saw a really dickish post over at Daily Kos earlier today. My attention was drawn to it on Facebook, saying, "Well, you know, don't feel bad for the coal miners; they got what they voted for." And I guess that's true as far as it goes, but Jesus, this is not the kind of Schadenfreude that's particularly enjoyable. It would be kind of interesting, however, to maybe someday quit treating them like precious little delicate snowflake babies and actually have a grown-up conversation with them. You know, do you see a connection between how you vote and who screws you? Just saying. Let's run over to the Skype line where in the far frozen north, Ron awaits. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Bob.
Are we having fun yet?
Well, my amount of enjoyment is tempered by the knowledge that I have a border between us. But yes, we're having fun. Observational comedy, etc.
Big time snow shoveling. Do y'all have snow shoveling parties up there in the far frozen north? Or
no, we don't share our misery.
Or you just go out and you shovel and you come in and you introduce the Reverend Craig to say a bottle of eggnog and wow, it's holidays.
By the way, the Rev says hi.
Hey, Rev.
Now, the one we just got, I guess, a little snowfall, 8 inches or so, was powdery light. It was like there was no moisture at all in it. And one of the pencil neck geeks I work with said he got his shovel out and he hit his front sidewalk and he made the big scoop to pick up a whole shovel full of snow. And it was full and didn't weigh much more than the shovel. At which point he went, oh, well, went into his garage, hooked up a 50-foot extension cord to his electric leaf blower.
And blew the snow away.
Yeah. He said, I had my entire cars and driveway and sidewalk cleared in 5 minutes. And
it's not always going to be like that, though. You're going to get the wet, sloppy stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Good.
But that last weather band, it's like the entire Arctic air mass just went boom, all the way from Washington to Maine. I mean, I was lucky. We dodged it here. It didn't get this far south. But they're saying we got like 40-50% chance of snow overnight.
Well, 30 to 31 days a year up here between mid-December to mid-April. We've got a 50% chance of seeing snow overnight. So I wouldn't worry about it. I would just hope that the neighbor next door doesn't get cold enough to fire up.
No, it's already happened.
Oh, really? Sorry.
Yeah, and I imagine I will spend overnight tomorrow night and Thursday night gagging. Overnight low on Thursday is 9 Fahrenheit. And that means that the coal thrown into the fireplace down the hill it'll be chugging and there'll be a yellow plume coming out and blowing straight at me.
Yeah, we're supposed to get down to -6 to -10 Fahrenheit on Thursday night, so we're breaking it in before it gets to you.
God, thanks so much. Snork, by the way, just told me, but Bob, that was the pre-vortex wave. The next one hits the Midwest Saturday.
Yep.
Oh, joy. By the way, you got a message from Jen in Australia.
Oh.
She says, Ron, please, all caps, tell me how you do it with a single border. I have a hemisphere and I'm freaking the right out.
Well, we don't put any troops along the border. we've got some very polite border people, and we should just smile. And if they piss us off, we smile at them even more. And we become so saccharine that they head south so they don't get diabetes.
Nice. Well, it's a it's a strategy. by the way, Devin observes, 8 inches up there? Well, that's 7 inches more than Trump's got. I know. Wait a minute. There's always a cowbell for a dick joke. I mean, there just has to be.
So is his name Richard?
Yeah. You know, there's.
I'm sorry.
You don't get two of those.
I know. By the way, I must give credit where credit is due, and I don't know if it was the original credit, but I first saw Twitler on our friend Carol Baker's website.
Well, Carol has been a wellspring between that and. I mean, Trumple Thin Skin is positively the best and most creative that I have seen.
Benito Cheeto is not bad.
Yeah, but it can't touch Trumple Thin Skin.
No. But Twitler, you know, he's moved on. And Carol moved on. She has growth potential. She adapts. She's flexible. And she gets ahead of the curve. And knows how to call a spade a shovel. There's a reason she's the queen of the minions.
It damn straight. Hey, let me ask you, West Virginia boy
sure.
that you are.
Yeah, verily, sir.
How well do you know your deep southern West Virginia?
I knew a lot about it a long time ago, but if you ask a question...
More particularly McDowell County.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Drove through there just a couple of years ago.
You ever heard of a little town called Gary?
Yeah.
Gary was named at the time it was founded for Elbert Henry Gary, one of the founders of U.S. Steel, which had massive coal operations in southern West Virginia.
Didn't they also found a steel plant or something up in Indiana, somewhere near the lakes up there near... South of Chicago?
I do believe. I do believe. Little town up there called Gary. The difference being that Gary, West Virginia, has every bit of 968 people in it.
Any of them happy?
Well, if they were, they're less so now. They have been told... which is becoming increasingly frequent, not just in West Virginia, but all across the United States, Ron. Folks, the 968 souls in Gary, West Virginia, have been told, don't drink the water.
Boil that stuff, yeah.
Don't boil it. No, 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 no.
Don't boil it.
Don't boil it neither.
Yeah.
Don't drink it. Don't bathe in it. Don't wash your clothes in it. Do not consume it in any way. You know why?
Pollution, Bob?
Any particular kind of pollution, Ron?
I there's some black humor involved, but I would say coal.
You would be right. Let's see. According to the Bluefield Daily Telegraph, water turned black like coal. As of today, the residents of Gary, West Virginia, were waiting to find out just not if they have a problem, but how bad the problem is.
And how many of those folks are on municipal water as opposed to well water?
This is municipal water.
Okay.
That's the problem. Almost 500 households in the town on the town's water supply have been advised not to use the water for drinking or cooking, even if it's boiled first. That's because no one knows yet if the sudden discoloration is a chemical issue, which would not be affected by boiling. Bottled water is being donated and trucked in, ready for pickup as of today. This started last Thursday, Ron. The
other thought that occurs to me,
yes.
Side subject, 968 people, 500 households. It sounds like it's either couples or widows or widowers, and all the kids have left town.
That would be about the size of it.
Yeah. McDowell County. Yeah, I should have known. Yeah.
You know, where the life expectancy is lower than that of a peasant in Guatemala.
Yeah.
You know, for the men folk.
I drove through there a couple of years ago, and a few things, you know, I took my pension, I took back roads and side roads. It was dismal. And my wife observed, I've traveled in the backcountry in Nigeria, Burkina Faso, and this is awful. And that was 20 years ago in Africa. So, but the telling thing is we crossed the border in, I think it was Welsh, into Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
High school across the border. Had a free flu clinic. Thousands of people were lined up to get their free flu shots. It was amazing.
And well, when you don't have health care and yeah. they offer you a free flu shot, you jump at the opportunity because the flu, when you don't have health care, can get deadly real quick.
And you're probably not working that day, so you've got time.
In 1983... Gary, West Virginia, had the highest unemployment rate in the United States, 1983.
Yeah.
It was at 90% unemployment. You remember? Remember 1983, back when it was morning in America? And American greatness was on the rise? Reagan? That guy?
Yeah, I remember him. You know, Reagan's starting to look good.
Well, at least he wasn't in hock to the Russians.
Nope.
By the way, can you help with that a little bit, please, Ron? Can I get a little perspective from north of the border?
Sure.
Can you explain to me why it is that the Bull Jesus Hillary, God damn it, why that crowd thinks that Big Bad Vladdy Daddy is just a fluffy teddy bear that they all want to hug and smolik all over?
Nope. Sorry, Bob. I got nothing. I can't understand it.
You're useless as tits on a bull tonight. You know that, Ron?
I was going to say boar hog, but yeah. I don't understand it. It's some kind of a coping mechanism, I would have to say.
I mean, did something crawl in their ears?
You've been watching Star Wars again, haven't you?
Captain,
I mean, Star Trek.
Captain, it was terrible. They put things in our ears. Yeah, there's our obligatory Star Trek reference.
Absolutely.
For the evening.
Absolutely. And we've got Twitler in. By the way, did come close enough to win Gerald a prize?
No. That involves the actual word.
Okay, and I will not say that word.
No, because then the duck will fall down and it'll hit you in the head with a snow shovel or something. I'm stymied. I mean, I was hard on Hillary Clinton. I'm the one who's warning right now that even as we speak, somewhere in Chappaqua, New York, somebody's whispering into her ear, going, "No, Hillary, really, run in 2020. You'll be younger in 2020 than Bernie was when he ran this year. You got this, babe. Third time's the charm, right?" And that shit's got to be stopped cold.
Why would anybody be saying that to her?
Because there's a shit ton of money to be made in it, Ron. I mean, look, Robbie Mook can either ruin another campaign for her or go to work as head coach of the Washington Generals playing the Globetrotters every 2 days. Losing is the only job he's suited to. Christ, I wouldn't trust him in the pits of a Jiffy Lube. But a lot of people got filthy, stinking rich on her terrible campaign. And, there's still a lot of the I'm with her contingent out there. And, it is a fact that she's crawling up toward 3 million votes more than Donald Trump got. Even if the Trumpanzees don't believe that.
I don't
understand... are these alleged members of the left who would rather have Trump. I mean, that just bumblefucks me.
I'll look up the definition of that after the call.
Yeah, you probably won't find it, but I'll happily explain it to you in a private conversation. But anyway, back to Gary, West Virginia, for a second.
So they got Blackwater. They've got no hope.
Right, and so the first thing they did is they called the West Virginia Health Department in Beckley.
Well, good luck with that.
Well, no, they actually reached somebody. The folks in Beckley told them to treat the water for discoloration, which they did, and the discoloration then went away. Here's the problem, though.
Science is wonderful.
Yeah, here's the problem, though. They don't know if the water, even though the discoloration was gone, they don't know if the water was still poison. And just for people who don't live near coal company, or near coal company, coal country, the town of Gary gets its well gets its water from a communal well.
Okay, that's yeah.
That is located, and this is language that might be a little foreign to folks. Again, not in coal country, but will kind of make you squeal like a scared child. The source of the town's water is a well located in the number 3 seam of the old U.S. Steel number 2 mine.
Okay, why the fuck would anybody put a well in coal, abandoned coal seam? Was that sort of what you were expecting?
That's what I said. That was my first response. What the fuck were you thinking? But then, of course, the whole area is undermined, so anywhere you sink a well, you're going into somebody's coal seam.
Yeah, in that country, yeah. But if they want the purest water, they should dig down to the deepest seam. Because that's where all the good stuff will collect, right?
Right, and here's another fun part. The well started being used by the town when the mine worked out about 40 years ago, with pumps on top of the ground and casings running down into the well. The well has produced good water to the city's water plant all that time. However, a surface mining operation is on top of the mountain behind those pumps. We don't know if that is a factor, Mayor Vineyard said. It never has been before. I'll add that we know of.
Yeah.
Gary, West Virginia is known as being an interesting little town where people walk around with babies' arms growing out of the tops of their heads. No, that's not in there.
And any reference to Blackwater has nothing whatsoever to do with the predilections of a large part of the populace in Gary and West Virginia.
No.
Blackwater's bad.
Blackwater not good.
But have they had do you have any indication that they've had their water tested by an independent
Somebody was supposed to be testing it.
The
results were due back today. One hopes not. However, all of this is sort of prelude to something that people may want to go and read, Ron. It was published today by USA Today, who I'm proud to say went out and actually did some real live honest-to-Jesus journalism. It does happen. You know, my disdain for the for-profit media is largely centered on television. If you leave a newspaper alone and you actually let them have enough money to operate on, they'll turn out some journalism from time to time. More often than you know.
Yeah, I would go beyond broadcast journalism. That my other pet peeve are aggregators who don't do anything on their own.
Oh no! And the so-called fake news. I mean, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I'm gonna. I started noticing these. I don't read right wing websites, but I started noticing the fake news, so called left news sites, a good while back.
Oh yeah, years ago.
A couple at least.
Well, in my case, it was further back than that. It was back when about the time Obama looked like he might win the election. There were, Republican testicles up under armpits, and they were doing anything they could for years to head him off and to head Hillary off. And it was fake news crap all over the place.
But I mean, there are particularly, you can spot them because they're all ads, and the ads aren't down the side. The ads are in the middle. And there's a whole lot more ad space than there is, and you've got to scroll past a shit ton of ads before you ever get to any content.
Yeah, clickbait.
And it's hard to it's hard to find a dateline. It's hard to find a byline.
Can I go on a personal rant here about one thing that really pisses me off?
Go, man, go.
It autoplay.
Oh, no, Jesus.
Oh, drives me nuts. I'll decide if I want to listen to it or if I want to read the accompanying text. Usually it's a text. Usually I dismiss it. I really, really hate having something blare out of nowhere that I didn't decide I wanted to play. And I can turn it off. And I can go to another link on the same damn site for something else that attracted my attention. And boom, there it is in my ear again. So, now, if you're going to do that bullshit, just
is there like a Firefox plugin that'll stop that shit?
Nope. There's been a shit ton of money invested in making sure they will get their message across to you.
But if you're on some sort of metered bandwidth, you're kind of screwed because it's like, you're being compelled to see it. And at the same time, you're being compelled to give up your bandwidth for it.
Yep. The only thing that
granted, works, audio is not as bad as video, but the video just...
Yeah, just sucks it right up, yeah. I'm surprised you can hear the audio for the sound of the coins hitting a bucket. But the only thing that works is to completely turn off your audio, which means every time you want to go listen to a really nice bluegrass song or go down a rabbit hole or whatever, you got to go through a whole bunch of machinations just to make sure you can do what you enjoy doing with your own damn computer on your own damn bandwidth. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I hate it
because
Canadian self.
You're going to get turned into the Canadian Office of Civility if you're not careful.
I know.
Jen just pointed out, Ron is so polite. He's an honorary Aussie in his politeness. Autoplay is fucking awful.
I did a bunch of contributions today to the official U.S. Navy slang dictionary.
Yes?
Yeah. I wasn't always polite, but I was factual. So, that counts for something. But in any event, there was one other topic I wanted to raise tonight. Well, okay. The only topic I wanted to raise tonight was hacking into websites.
Okay, so I wanted, that was where I was going with you next.
Damn prescient, aren't you?
It's the frayed purple. It's the moth-eaten purple robe with the frayed moon and star appliques and "Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark, Baby" written in glow-in-the-dark paint on the front,
and the thin spider web holding us together. Yes.
Well, that and the cracked magic eight ball that always says "Answer Hazy, Ask Again Later."
But as long as you agree not to raise the specter of the Illuminati yet again, because we don't do everything bad, I'll deal with anything you want to bring up.
Well, no, I just I'm in a weird place, Ron, because I'm in the position of thinking that maybe the CIA is trying to do something that's actually halfway patriotic. Or that maybe this isn't, you know, for once, they're not just trying to bullshit their way into murdering, some socialist in the developing world, or to support throwing people out of airplanes or murdering them in soccer stadiums.
So that said, one man's opinion, CIA does not have the skill set. There's only one agency in the U.S. that does. And they're not allowed to operate, theoretically, within U.S. borders.
I thought that was the CIA.
No, that's the NSA. That's where the brains are.
That's where the Uniblab 20,000, the whole daisy chained lot of them down in the basement are, right?
Yeah. Hi, Fred. I'm sorry. I don't mean to piss you off, but you're underfunded. Sorry, for all the new listeners, that was an obligatory reference to Agent Fred.
Yeah, he spells it P-H-R-E-D.
P-H-R-E-D. But
his baby brother's name is spelled P-H-R-E-A-D.
But, you know, they are good at what they do. And if they put together an intelligence briefing with really small, one or two syllable words, maybe Benito Chito would be able to understand it. And the bottom line is, the NSA with all their money and the CIA with all the supplementary money can support and defend a few government websites, the really important ones, the data sites. Once you cross that boundary out into the public sector and commercial space, there are only two kind of companies or individuals, those that have been hacked and those that are going to be. Which is why I hardly ever put anything on Facebook or any other public medium or an email that I haven't personally encrypted with a key that I know is relatively secure. And if it's open in the public, I'd never say anything that I wouldn't want my dead mother to see. I'll curse and swear and all the rest of it, but the fact is, there is no real privacy unless you take direct measures to protect it. And everybody can decide how they feel about that, and everybody can say, I don't put anything up there that I don't want people to see or that I wouldn't want to see on a billboard in 20 years. And that's fine. That's your call.
Okay, but from a state standpoint, Ron.
Oh, okay. People that have real money and resources, yeah.
Right. Is what's being described in the various news reports, primarily being done by print media, does that strike you as viable? I mean, there was an article on The Intercept the other day where Glenn Greenwald seemed really pissed off that the CIA had not come directly to him and explained everything directly to Glenn Greenwald. But there are editors at these newspapers who are paid to make calls about what to publish and what not to publish.
Yeah, that was public naivete on his part. You have to, the mandate of the CIA and the NSA are to, CIA first, are people-based resources, ground-based resources directed outside the borders. The mission of the NSA is electronic resources directed outside the borders, both of whom are designed to detect any threats to U.S. national security. The domestic agencies that deal with that, of which there seem to be innumerable ones, and it's like they breed in a closet at night like coat hangers, fall under the rubric of Homeland Security. And they don't have nearly the same skill sets and resources.
Well, what about this lackadaisical response by the FBI going way back into summer and maybe even spring of this year?
Which lackadaisical response?
To the hacking of the DNC.
First of all, we have no idea what the FBI actually did, because you're not going to be talking to any live serving people who were involved. You'll be talking about people who think they know what was involved. And if you're...
You mean kind of like the way Rudy Giuliani said, oh, the FBI is goddamn pissed at Hillary because Hillary, goddamn it!
Yeah. All that, yeah. These are... I've dealt with a lot of them and over the years. A lot of them are really tight-assed, self-important people. But that said, they know what they're doing. And they're not going to risk your whole damn career. Politicians come and go.
So do you I guess the bottom line here, Ron, is do you believe, and understanding that that's a dangerous word, do you believe what's being said about the Russian interference with these computer systems, and particularly do you believe the conclusion that is being reached that they actually meant not only to interfere with the electoral process but to promote the election of Donald Trump?
Yes. What's the downside? I mean, both sides collect information, both parties hack. It's a question of what you do with the information. If you could do something to the Russian government that you thought would over a few years result in somebody other than Putin, somebody who was more moderate and appealing to the interest of the West or even Ukraine, would you do anything to let that information go, to manage it?
Do you think
most people would say, yeah, I could see a case where that might happen?
Do you think this is an is this?
We're speaking rhetorically, of course. Right,
I yes, absolutely.
Hey,
but
Fred.
Hi, Fred, and Fred. You know, they both got their jobs at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rhetorically speaking, in an entirely hypothetical universe. Do you think is this an opening gambit or an isolated, self-contained universe? Because see,
this is ongoing.
I can see where having a guy, you know, Trump, who is in hock up to his eyeballs to financiers in that country, who, if he got the notes called, would be brokered in the Ten Commandments. Who can't sell his assets because his assets would not yield net value.
Can I jump in for a second?
Go right ahead.
Would Trump? Who's this Trump of which you speak? It's a few hundred million dollars. It's a couple of billion dollars. Why would we play an ace where a deuce would do?
Keep going.
I can't see where Trump's financial exposure to anybody in Eastern Europe, Russia, etc., would be of enough financial value to do something that would seriously jeopardize diplomatic relations, economic sanctions, etc.
I can see
fucking with the electoral process simply because just to let a lot of folks who are going to be around after the next administration's gone know, okay, we can do this. Which means by extension, we could also tap into your entire banking system, like SWIFT. You need to look up who SWIFT is, but they manage a large percentage of all the financial transactions that go on around the world. And most state actors will have an active plan to attempt to attack SWIFT to shut down financial transfers into a target of opportunity. That is much more significant than pissing around with the DNC or the RNC.
Agreed.
Except from the standpoint of sending up a message to say, like a semaphore flag, I can do this.
Okay, bear with me, because I'm working from my own ignorance here.
And I'm sharing mine. So,
if, for instance, the sanctions against Russia, which have financial implications.
Yeah.
And if said financial implications have a great deal to do with money going directly into Putin's pocket because, you know, despot. Would it not be beneficial to use whatever leverage is available to get those sanctions lifted? Would it not be nice to have an asset whom you could count on to lift those sanctions?
Yeah, but do you send up semaphores when you're going to do something like that to let the enemy know you're going to be attacking? I don't think so. They're far subtler than that. Now this was.
I mean, I'm just trying to put all this together in the same universe. It's a universe where Trump said on the campaign trail that he was going to shake down NATO. Now, Big Bad Vladdy Daddy would like nothing better than to have NATO shatter into a million tiny pieces, because that means that once again we're back in pre-1914 days, when it was this tangle of various alliances that nobody really knew about, and suddenly a crown prince or whatever getting shot in Sarajevo causes an entire generation of people in great of young men in Great Britain to get all dead. Yeah. And France and Germany and Italy and Austria and Hungary and Russia
and America.
And sure seems like that would make it easier to say cruise a couple of tank divisions into Ukraine.
Yeah. But it's still too small a game, I think, for the Russian government writ large to have done it. I can certainly attribute it to, you know, criminal organizations or satellite organizations, but the stakes just aren't.
So you don't buy the New York Times and Washington Post reporting about the governmental agencies, what were they, Sleazy Bear and Queasy Bear or whatever?
I fully believe it happened. Whether it came from the top down, no. I mean, he's way too smart for that. There are a whole bunch of other Russians, though, that want to get rich. And they may have figured out some way where they could leverage this to make it happen, but I can't buy Putin doing it.
But an underling,
yeah,
or somebody in the FSB, which is the heir apparent to the KGB,
which is where Putin came from,
right?
Yeah. So, yeah, but as far as an overt or covert action from the official Russian government against the U.S., no, I don't buy it. It's, even for the Russians, that's entirely too unsubtle. So, man's opinion, and I've got...
Well, no, and you trust them to work in subtle.
Yeah. For the big targets, yeah. There's a reason that most of the grandmasters for the past 50 years have come from Russia. I mean, they understand the long game. And, you know, I would question, if I were one of the senior guys in any federal agency looking at the traces of where all this action came from. I would be asking people if they'd look for fingerprints and spoofs to say that it hadn't gone through five countries and come out of China. Because if you wanted to trigger enough, okay, we got the whole conspiracy thing going on here. False flag.
Damned Illuminati.
Yeah. The Chinese tend to benefit just as much from Trump getting in as the Russians do. Because the Chinese can play their big sticks and gain more economic advantage than the Russians could even think about. And that hasn't been mentioned in any analysis I've seen in the media. The only time you see the Chinese mentioned is to indicate they're pissed off about Taiwan, and everybody's concerned about them digging up dirt and putting more rocks in the middle of the scratlings.
So where then is there, what's in it for them?
Oh, the Chinese?
Yeah.
Lower the value of the U.S. dollar, increase their dominance. They've got enough money on hand already. They don't have to worry about a 1 or 2 year dip in trade with the U.S. or the West. They can coalesce their economic control and sphere, political sphere in Asia. They can continue to build up their military. They can intimidate India to the point where India would realize they can never, ever be the number three economic and military power in the world.
What about the saber rattling? On the campaign trail, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini said, on the one hand, well, you know, I want to work with the Russians toward peace, and you know it was nothing but saber rattling toward China.
Yeah. Okay, you're talking about China that tends to view things through the long lens, if necessary, in terms of generations, versus a Trump. Tends to view things in terms of the next fiscal quarter.
Or the next 15 seconds, or the next tweet.
Yeah. Or whatever the limit of his attention span is at the moment. By the way, we've gotten far deeper and more esoteric than I suspected when I called in this evening.
Happens.
I will tell everyone listening that I am speaking totally off the top of my head. I'm not filtering very much. And I'm only saying this stuff because I trust each and every one of you. And I know where you live.
And you've already... they're all pre-hacked for your convenience.
Yeah, I couldn't resist.
And there's pictures.
In terms of actual facts, I know the square root is sweet fuck all. That's a mathematical term.
Yes, I understand.
It's the antithesis of infinity. So, I'm simply responding based on damn near 50 years of working with these folks in this community. And most of them are way too damn professional to get sucked in, whether in Canada, Australia, England, U.S., they're way too professional to get sucked into all this petty bullshit that's going on to make political points.
Okay, so here's a question. Here's a question of more technical than esoteric nature.
You make me nervous.
Is it actually possible to trace down, dot by dot, line by line, hop by hop, and go, oh, yeah, it was them?
Yes.
And do our well-meaning, if occasionally accident-prone, intelligence organizations, do we have confidence in them?
Yes.
To be able to do that?
We do.
So that if they say, X done it.
Yep.
Even despite the people going, oh, Jesus, Hillary did it. Oh, God damn it.
Right.
Before they say they done it, they will have proven that they've done it 15, 20, or 25 times in alternate routes, examples. Yep, it all goes back to the same point.
So is there some finite
point in time, every transmission had to start from a given point, and they can be tracked that fine if you devote enough resources to them, if you're sufficiently interested. Doesn't mean you can get a damn warrant, but yeah, you
well,
can,
it's the
you,
planet, but
well, the problem we get this whole idea of warrants in the U.S. in Canada and the UK, etc., that we can get a warrant. We can go in and seize your damn computer. Well, not if it's gone across 11 goddamn borders and it was only within a given country for a few milliseconds before it worked. Part of the message worked another hop that went through China, and part of it worked a hop that went through Japan and some through Finland, and it all met in Chicago, got assimilated, and then sent to Washington. It's really hard to prove to a judge, we got a pretty good feeling, Judge. Yeah. You think we need a warrant to seize that computer? It's really hard.
Well, a criminal law probable cause is a much different animal than conclusive proof.
Yeah.
Probable cause is merely more likely than not.
Yeah.
Clear and convincing is a way lot higher up the thermometer than that.
But probable cause gets pretty damn murky when you try to indicate that, okay, there may have been 7, possibly 9, oh, hell, maybe 11 countries involved in this, the entire context of this message. Because nothing travels by a single route uninterrupted unless it's on a government circuit. No.
As Ted Stevens famously reminded us, it's a series of tubes. It's not a big truck.
Yeah, tubelets. Yeah.
And there are tubes within tubes.
Some of the algorithms that are out there now will break out a standard, let's say, 500-word email message into as maybe as 100,000 packets that have gone over 20,000 networks to all reach on the other end, be time-correlated, reassimilated, and all done in the blink of your grandmother's eye. And to you, it looks like it's exactly the same message that was sent, but it traveled so many routes and parsed into so many different parts. The putting together is not a trivial thing from a legal standpoint.
No, and it blows, from a technical standpoint, it blows my mind, just for instance, to consider this broadcast that is being listened to in 3 or 4 or 5 different places in Australia, all over the United States, China.
Parts of it may have come through Sarajevo.
All over Europe. Okay. The last I checked, the only continent besides Antarctica that we don't have a listener on is Africa.
Well, no, Bob.
Ron's going to get you for that.
The Emirates are technically on which continent?
I kind of had that as Asia.
No, the UAE is part of Africa. It's right above Djibouti and Yemen and all that stuff that leads down to that point in Johannesburg.
And I'll be dipped. We consider the Saudi Peninsula to be Africa.
On terms of continents, yeah. It's not Asia until after it gets across to, I think, Afghanistan.
Well, no, I mean, by ancient standards, Palestine was Asia. Turkey was Asia.
Yeah, but they don't get to vote and decide this stuff, Bob.
I had no idea there'd been a rewrite.
No, I'm thinking that the Emirates and the Arabian Peninsula are considered part of Africa. Saudi Arabia, is that considered part of Africa or Asia?
The Romans considered that Asia.
Yeah, but there is no continent called the Middle East. So they got to parse them up somehow. Where
no, the Middle East is a bullshit term that we more or less introduced into the conversation.
So where does Egypt fit?
Egypt is Africa.
Why?
Why? Because Africa. I mean, it's there. It's, you know, just a hop, skip, and a jump north from Sudan. It's on the continent. Got no, you know, there's no water between it and, say, Libya.
Well, I'm willing to consider myself.
I always thought
of it as part of Africa.
No, you see, you're being challenged. I mean, got a note here from Marty. The UAE is considered to be more Asia than Africa. See below. UAE is a Middle Eastern Federation country in Western Asia at the southeast end of the Arabian Peninsula, occupying the Persian Gulf, bordering Oman to the east and Saudi Arabia to the south, and shares marine borders with Qatar and Iran.
All I wanted to do was get you a lister in Africa, Bob.
What? And, you know, there is no overestimating the degree of appreciation I have for your kind solicitude. But
that's,
I'm sorry.
That's a long
we're just,
way of saying it didn't work.
You know, get me Cairo. Get me Johannesburg. Get me Tangier.
Okay, Bob, there's no damn way I'm
Casablanca. I want a listener in Casablanca because I'm a romantic. Mm-hmm. And it'll give me an opportunity to use my terrible Humphrey Bogart impression.
Yeah. Well, I've taken up
a... Wait. Okay, upgrade.
Okay.
Update. Jen tells me you have a listener from Africa here in Australia. Our neighbor is from Congo. Love you. Often joins me for coffee to listen in. Beautiful. It's a start. Call your friends and neighbors.
Call your friends, yeah.
And Brother Deacon Asa says, yes, the UAE is, in fact, in Asia. I'm sorry, Ron. I'm sorry.
Christ. Trashed by a fellow Canadian. Mm. Well,
I know.
Just to show my antipathy, I'm going to make a snow in Vancouver. What do you think of that, Asa?
Too late. I've seen the photograph.
Yeah. Thought I'd try it.
Yeah, well, it was a valiant effort, Ron.
I guarantee you 100% of the time, if you don't ask, the answer is no. So,
By the way, in terms of Russia and money, you might be interested to know, Vince just wrote in, the Russian ETF has gone from $18.53 to $21.82 since 10 November 2016.
Yeah, they're rubles, Bob.
Plastics, Ron. Plastics.
All that money you spent on gas station pizza?
Yeah, I know.
Rubles.
Yeah. Hey, I've got a replacement for gas station pizza now.
Oh, do you? What?
The fine folks down at Gino's Pizza have developed and introduced a flatbread pizza. And its crust is even thinner than the gas station pizza thin crust.
Ah.
But they're a little more pricey on the toppings. Up at gas station pizza, any topping you want is free. It's just a one price pizza. If in fact you can call it a pizza.
Oh, maybe you could answer me something.
Well, after all you've done for me.
Digressing entirely. Secret Sandwich Society.
See?
Put up a post of a really nice looking, look like a roast beef sandwich on sourdough bread, nice accompaniments. And the very first posting that came up with someone who was, no, I don't comment because of illogical political comments. And basically I responded by going, huh? What the hell's that got to do with a picture of a sandwich? And Gerald chimed in, I have no idea what the backstory was on that, but there were people talking about free speech and all kinds of crap because the restaurant put up a picture of a sandwich.
I know.
Any other station available?
There are multiple stages to this. A couple of months back, some butthurt fiend of coal said, "I was told in there in that Seekamit Sandwich Society that they wouldn't serve somebody that worked for the coal industry," which was, of course, a wholesale lie. And in turn, caused massive Sturm und Drang. After the election, on his own personal page, the owner of that particular location made his feelings known about the election. This, of course, brought out an entire goddamn battalion of flapping, flying monkey, goddamn Trumpanzee assholes. And so now, they tried to make secret a little revetment in their fucking culture wars. When nobody's ever been denied service, nobody's ever been even given a cross-eyed look. I mean, hell, it's not like they created a sandwich that was nothing but baloney and called it the fucking Trump.
And they let me in there.
They have let all kinds of Canadians in there.
Even Asa.
So, you know, but we can't, you know, we can't just sit down and have a sandwich without some goddamn butthurt Trumpanzee trying to foul the works. And I'm getting a little tired of the butthurt Trumpanzees, too.
It's the same kind of culture, though, that spawned, you know, three generations of disliking my family for a recently elected governor in West Virginia because he hosted an uncle of mine who was very beloved out of a few hours of overtime.
The McCoy thing. We hillbillies are like that, Ron. Did I tell you the gas station in Versailles, Kentucky story?
Oh no.
Okay, so when I was a wee little guy, not in a child carrier, not wearing a safety belt, but rather standing on the bench seat of the 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan, turquoise in color, as we howled down the road between West Virginia and Alabama. When you got to the Bluegrass Parkway, after you had gotten through Lexington, Kentucky, and got to Versailles, and you get on the Bluegrass Parkway there, and that takes you to Elizabethtown, where you pick up I-65 South.
Right.
Okay, so back then, the Bluegrass Parkway was a toll road. And it was all automated. There were no human beings in any of the booths. So you had to stop in Versailles on the east end and make sure you had sufficient change to get down the road. And as a little tiny fella who was just, you know, about 2 years old and learning to read, I loved the toll booths because when you threw the money in, the light went on and it said thank you, and as a little tiny tyke, I referred to those as thank you machines. You could pay it to say thank you. Never mind. So my father always tried to, you know, there was one of those nifty little coin slots there in the 1966 Chrysler Newport Town Sedan, turquoise in color. And he would always try to have it filled with change for when we hit the toll road. And one day he didn't. And so we stopped at a gas station in Versailles, Kentucky. And he went in to get a couple of dollars worth of change. And they told him, no, we're not going to give you any change unless you buy something here. And my dad said, well, you know, I bought gas here before. I said, well, you know, what have you done for me lately? And my dad's response was, well, you know, I guess I'm going to go back up the road and find some change somewhere else. And by God, it will be a cold day in hell before I ever spend another penny in this establishment. Good day.
Never done that. Yep.
We never stopped at that place again, ever. And were it not for the fact that the place has now since been bulldozed, karma, there would be another generation beyond me being taught never to stop there again. On the other hand, the place on the other side of the road has been torn down and rebuilt and come back to life and probably 10 different times. And it's still there. But, you know, you have to make a left across the road to get in there. My dad just wanted to veer right off the road, go in, take care of business, whatever.
Great, move on. Yeah.
And
miles to go.
And that place no longer exists. It's just a wide spot in the road now.
So think Victory. Maybe you weren't the only ones it happened to?
Oh, I'm pretty sure we weren't. And, you know, I guess it caught up.
Yeah.
Damn.
Death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, a dollar's worth of quarters and a dollar's worth of dimes and nickels.
Well,
I mean, 1966, 1967, you know, the toll was maybe a dime. But no, couldn't part with it.
Okay. Circling back and then circling back again. In software terms, it's referred to as multiple nested regressions.
Yes.
First, I'm going to go back to the Secret Sandwich Society and the General Food scene in Fayetteville. I'm going to recommend to everybody, including myself, that if you're within 75 miles of that town, find it and find some place to eat. There's a lot of good food there. And then circling back even further, getting back to the whole idea of state actors and hacking and any role they may have decided to play in presidential elections. I don't want this to sound, I won't say naive. I don't want it to sound over simplifying things. But something as small as a presidential election in the U.S. is not enough to make a major state actor, whether it's China, Russia, U.S., England, France, okay, Australia, Jen, tip their hand on what your capabilities are. Because I'm back to the never play an ace where a deuce will do, which tells me it may have happened. It probably happened. It may have happened for some sort of a perceived political gain, but it wasn't done on behalf of the government of Russia. It would have been done by people seeking to gain some advantage within the government of Russia or China or wherever. I just can't attribute it from top down from Putin's office. He's too damn smart for that.
No, I'm sure he wouldn't get his fingerprints on it. He'd let an underling get their fingerprints all over it.
So,
you know, somebody who could be taken out with a polonium pellet in the tip of an umbrella, for instance.
Yeah, I just sent someplace up beyond the tree line for a few years. But if you think about it from a strategic standpoint, you get Pence after Trump. If Trump self-destructs, which may happen, or he may just say, fuck it, I don't want to do this anymore. It's too damn hard. I got to think for half an hour at a time. You get Pence. Well, Pence is a right-wing stupid. He's not exactly somebody the Russians are going to be eager to see get in office. Where's the benefit of that? Plus, you're just setting the stage for, theoretically, if people get their act in order, people getting pissed off enough to essentially overthrow the government in the ballot box. And you end up with another democratic regime. How's that benefit to Russia? I just keep looking down the road and going, okay, who's going to benefit from this happening?
Well, I
and it's all short-term economic actors. It's no long-term strategic actors.
But what if you were really, really, really concerned, based on the campaign rhetoric, about what Hillary Clinton had said about the relationship she wanted with Russia?
What did Hillary ever do?
Well, for one thing, she said she wanted to establish a no-fly zone in Syria, which would have put the United States air assets up against the Russian air assets, which I don't think the Russians wanted. And I particularly am no big fan of World War III and all the hoopla that comes with it.
And I'm pretty sure Hillary wouldn't have done it because she doesn't have the balls.
Well, but she sure rattled that saber.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, while all of this is going down here, it might be worth noting that as a result of all of this chaos, the final act of the rape of Aleppo has opened. The United Nations reports that at least 82 civilians, including 11 women and 13 children, have been murdered by Russian-backed Syrian forces in recent days. Syrian forces have been reported by the UN to have executed dozens of civilians. Assad's forces, backed by the Russians, have entered homes, killed those inside. Others have been caught and killed on the spot as they tried to flee. Again, these are not combatants. These are just civilians. Ibrahim Abu al-Leith said, "Our fate is sealed. Why would we hide? It won't do us any good. We will either die or be captured." And he's not a combatant either. He's with the White Helmet Rescue Service. And they've had a free hand to do this as a result, I'd argue, of the chaos here. I mean, this is a deliberate slaughter.
Yeah, but broad brush, it's a topic for an entire other evening in terms of how did the Middle East, particularly that part of the Middle East, get to where they are now. Nobody is blameless. It goes back to the First World War, where the seeds were sown. And there is no way out where innocents are not going to continue to be killed. You just can't turn around and walk away from it. But if you stay involved with it, more and more people are going to get killed. And nobody's come up with a clear plan to get things back to any level of stability in the Middle East. I don't see one. I haven't heard anybody put one forward. And you could tie up several entire shows.
You know, Ron, I keep some sound clips handy for just such occasions.
Hopefully not mine.
I have here a clip from David Lean's Lawrence of Arabia.
Yep.
Which, of course, is very Eurocentric and very biased.
Great movie. I just watched it again.
Well, then you will.
The other night.
You will recognize this line.
So long as the Arabs fight tribe against tribe, so long will they be a little people, a silly people, greedy, barbarous, and cruel.
Remember that one?
I do.
And every now and then, pan-Arabism flares up, and then they realize that, no, we really do hate each other's guts. And, the survival of Israel is predicated on the inability of the Arab states to stand as a unified force. Effectively. Yeah, I'm not arguing for the non-existence of Israel. I'm just saying
no,
that chaos in the in 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 what has been referred to as the Arab Street, which, you know, was always a troublesome phrase too, is what allows, it's what keeps the dynamic in place. If peace ever actually broke out in the Middle East, do you realize how much trouble that would be?
And how many people would be trying to destabilize it?
Yeah, exactly.
I do. But I've often thought that I forget who made the comparison, but Israel is the national transplant into the body of the Middle East, and you have to keep injecting immunosuppressant drugs to keep it from being rejected. And nothing would ever change that.
Well, anybody with a working appreciation of, oh, say, 800-year-old history would know a little bit about the Kingdom of Outremer, which was a previous European attempt to transplant a state onto the Levant.
Yeah.
And it succeeded for precisely as long as Europe was able to maintain the flow of goods and finances and troops to prop it up. And, of course, the Crusader Kingdom was a bloodthirsty thing. It routinely, you know, when the Crusaders finally took Jerusalem, they murdered men, women, and children, in the name of Christ, of course, and did so indiscriminately, Christian, Jew, Muslim, it mattered not. Jerusalem streets ran red with blood. Meanwhile, you get a little pushback on the whole Russian thing from Brother Deacon Asa. He says, Putin poisoned Viktor Yushchenko in London over the Orange Revolution. How does Ron think the U.S. election is too small a deal for them?
Okay, Asa, this could be an entirely different conversation. But when he poisoned anyone as part of his past job, it was because it was his past job.
This wasn't as his past job, though.
Yeah. Too small. No. The stakes are too damn big. And, no, they wouldn't. No, I don't buy it. Unless there's more convincing proof, I'm going to go actors further down the line. And he's going to find himself.
Well, I think what you're saying is plausible deniability.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not. I'm thinking it's entirely possible that there are hundreds of people within the Russian government, Secret Service, that are every bit as devious, cunning, and manipulative as that short little asshole is who rides bears. It's a dog-eat-dog world. And what's, they wear suits and ties in Washington, but in Russia, there are hundreds of thousands of other people that are every bit as smart as Putin. They just haven't been around as long, and they're entirely capable of setting up their own games and running their own games and not leaving any tracks. Same in Washington. There've been rogue. Who was the guy that ran a rogue operation under Nixon or Reagan in Central America?
I don't think there was anything rogue about Iran-Contra. You talking about Ollie North?
Ollie North, yeah. But Ollie North could exist without knowing about it within the Russian sphere the way they operate. So.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of...
I'm not going to lay this right on the door of the Kremlin. I'm perfectly happy to agree with the fact that, yep, I'm pretty sure something happened coming out of Russia. Was it orchestrated by Putin? I don't think the evidence is there. But I also believe that we know exactly who did it, and if we wanted to make sure they didn't do it again, we could.
Well, perhaps it might be beneficial to try to make sure they can't do it again. But of course, that might be deemed an act of warfare. You know, from a historical perspective, you mentioned the guy who rides bears. You know, there's always a back reference, and I thought immediately of the historical report that Mark Antony, when he was Julius Caesar's master of the horse, which is second in command to the Roman dictator, and Caesar was out of town, Mark Antony had this monumental ego, and he had his chariot drawn through Rome, pulled by lions. Wouldn't you have loved to have been the Roman slave who hooked them up to the tree?
Yeah.
But these personalities always pop up through history. You know, tigers, lions, bears, you know, as some means of showing one's, well, there's no better word than the Spanish one, machismo.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, we have to give a toaster to Carol Baker. We have to give a toaster to Carol Baker.
Oh, always.
When I mentioned the polonium pellet, Carol responded, "Anyone not using iocane powder is a fucking amateur." Inconceivable.
Well, I won't piss that lady off.
No.
No.
Stupid we ain't.
Especially when stupid can be painful. In any event, I've made an oath 3 or 4 times. When I call in to Bob, I'm going to limit the call to 15 minutes.
You know better.
Yeah, but nobody wants to listen to anybody go on for more than 15 minutes. You want another point of view. And I've totally violated that. I apologize.
You would be surprised, Ron. You would be surprised. I get notes talking about the fact that these long-form conversations are what sets the horn apart from everything else.
Yeah, but I'm not convinced that makes it better.
Well, the people who write are.
It makes it different. I will agree.
And it offers the opportunity for people to fully develop ideas.
After 15 or 20 minutes on a given subject, just about everybody has exhausted at least the top talking points of their ideas.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's not one idea. You know, you don't even necessarily know what the idea that comes out of the whole thing is until it's over.
Well, that's
which is where the magic happens.
In effect, what I'm saying, without the actual religious relevance, is I'm really trying to be a good Christian and stick to 15 minutes. And I keep sinning, Bob.
For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of Bob.
Yea, verily.
See what I did there?
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. Got to reference right away. Okay, I'm going to sign off.
This time for real.
To all of Bob listeners, I will simply say, send money. It's worth it. You get it back 100-fold.
Exactly. Thank you, Ron. Thank you for those kind words. And thank you for the damned engaging conversation, even if you think you shouldn't have gone over 15 minutes. I think you should have.
Well, I did. And so there we are.
I win.
You usually do. It's your bathtub and your rubber duck, Bob. Okay.
We'll leave my rubber duck out of this, Ron. Okay. He's not here to defend himself. Quack.
Okay, y'all take care, folks.
All right, later, Ron. Bye.
Good
now.
Night.
The one and only Ron in the far frozen north. And I should mention that, yes, thank you very kindly. Angelica got us started, and then an anonymous contribution came in the amount of $100. Said simply, "For the resistance." And that is touching indeed. So, yeah, I mean, I'm no Keith Olbermann, but this is a corner of the resistance. And I will not collaborate. And I will not cooperate. And I will not sit idly by while whatever elements of goodness or decency this country once had, and I realize there are many people who think there is absolutely none to it, And I myself have said that a nation that begins in a baptism of other people's blood is going to have a real hard time going forward. And that's kind of true. But thank you. Thank you. Steve in New York would like to see it bumped up by another $10. He'll match the next $10 coming in if somebody will throw $10 in front of it. Thank you, Steve. As to long-form conversation, Steve also noted, no, it makes it better. So thank you. Thank you very much, Steve. Brother Deacon Asa says, 15-minute rule is bullshit. I can listen to you and Ron read the phone book. And that's, again, I think it's part of the magic. It's the ability to go long form. If granted, conversation is as much, well, it has elements of art to it. And as such, if you can, you can. If you can't, you can't. Some people just need to get in, say their piece, and get out. And that's cool, too. So however you prefer is how I want the conversation going forward. Jen. Jen says, I was just going to say thank you, Ron, for calling in earlier. And by the way, Arthur is here from Congo and says, g'day. G'day, Arthur! How cool. We've got a Congolese listener. Yay, Congo. Well, or you know what I mean. Okay, speaking of furthering the conversational effort, let's run back over and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Well, how do you do? Greetings from downtown Oz.
Well, I hear Punky in the background, so I feel somewhat relieved.
Oh, good. I'm of two minds, I guess, about the long-form conversations, even though more often than not, I am a purveyor in that particular art form of conversing. But the good side of long-form is sometimes when you're making points and observations, you need a good, strong, healthy preamble to set the stage for what follows. But I won't vote it up or down. It just is what it is. Everything takes as long as it takes, you know?
Right, and the other part of that is that it is what it is, and it ain't nowhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
I would posit, Scott, that if this were right, you know, there's no need for long form conversation like this on Right Wing Radio. Right Wing Hate Radio serves one purpose and one purpose alone, and that is to deliver marching orders.
Yeah.
Because
Limbaugh calls it drive by whatever, because that's all it is. It's drive by bullshit.
Well, yeah, but they, you know, they just want to tell people what to do, what to think, and how to think and how to believe.
Yeah,
I don't have a lot of interest in that. I share my opinions, and there is no demand here that anyone adopt a single one of them. Whether it be my. My taste in barbecue, or my preference for not breathing coal smoke when it gets cold outside. There are no mandates of that sort here.
And that is, after all, the healthier form of communication. You're not twisting arms to get people to agree. You're simply letting them know that points of view other than their own exist. And if anyone is threatened by that, I have to question the premise of their programs. That would be the right wingers on the TV and cable and radio. So that's why.
And secondarily to that, Scott, I also believe that people are experts in their own lives, yeah, and don't necessarily need to be told what to think or how to think it. There's a lot of value in spending a lifetime carrying the likes of Donald Trump and the 1% on our backs. And by God, I think we deserve every bit as much airtime as the Lark's Vomit Canopy crowd that get booked as experts in the for-profit media.
And sometimes it's helpful and beneficial to remind folks or sort of chime in with the notion that, yes, in fact, they are on the right track. Some people will doubt their own thinking.
And in the case of liberal and progressive thought, Scott, we are not authoritarians. There is an element of, you know, the old saying is that trying to get progressives or liberals to go in one direction is like herding cats. And I've said, no, hell, that's easy. All you got to do is open a can of Little Friskies and you can get things done. No, this is like butterfly wrangling. We have to process information. We can't just be told what to do and what to think. And I'm very suspicious of people who do that.
It may even go beyond butterfly. God, my nose fixed. Now my mouth is shut. You can't buy these teeth through the mail. You've got to go in and have somebody fit them in a professional way, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it may go beyond butterfly wrangling or cat wrangling. It could knock itself up to the level of shoveling smoke, which is exceedingly hard to do if you've ever tried it.
It is. Hard to get a good spadeful.
Indeed. But the other day, the big story was poor Donald Trump. He is balking at getting daily intelligence briefings because he's, quote, a smart person, close quote, already. Now, obviously what has happened here, he's confused his terms, personal IQ versus national/international security data. So my idea to help poor old Donald sit down and take responsibility and do the things that presidents do, maybe the people in the relevant intelligence agencies should rename the daily briefings. Call them, hold on, something like Daily American Greatness External Risk and Impacts Updates.
Or, you know what? Too many words, Scott. Sorry, but just too many words. The Daily American Greatness Making Report.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm sure you can work in even a good acronym, you know, for whatever we come up with. But that poor bastard. Who calls into this program who is a big fan of Washington Journal on C-SPAN?
Oh, that's Todd. I don't think he'd say he's a fan. It's more like an anthropological fixation.
Well, I was thinking of Todd. I got through this morning. It was one of those rare events when the question of the hour was one that I felt I could address with some coherence. And it was along the lines of how will Trump do dealing with the Russians? Okay, that was the overall topic for an early segment of Washington Journal today. So I called in and I made some good points. I even took the opportunity to refer to Trump as my favorite, the demented circus peanut. And I think I detected a slight upturn of the corners of the mouth of the poor guy herding cats this morning on Washington Journal, because that is a lot like herding cats when you're dealing with America armed only with a phone and a couple of viable brain cells calling in to answer ponderous questions.
Yeah, just pushing that button every 90 seconds. Yeah. Caller, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air.
And as impassioned as you please. I mean, I would like to know what it is. What, you know, I think back to the movie A Clockwork Orange. Are they strapped into a theater seat with their eyes propped open and subjected to some exotic treatment to cause themselves not to react? Is that the training behind being a Washington?
No. Here's an obligatory Doom reference. Just off camera, there's a goddamn Gom Jabbar, okay?
Okay, all right. Oh, Jesus. But my thought.
And the hand is in the punishment box.
Yeah, okay. That works. You got to do what you got to do to get stuff done that you want done now.
Because that's the only explanation, because otherwise at some point in time, dude is going to go, Jesus Christ, you got Booger Eater of the Week. You win. And he hauls out Reverbo's bell and just ding, 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 ding.
Oh, Lord. But to answer the question about, how will Trump deal with the Russians, my observation was, and I even said this on national and international TV, I on some level feel sorry for the guy, Trump, simply because he is not known for his understanding, grasp, or appreciation of history. Okay, unless it's the history of building big, gaudy buildings in major metropolitan areas. But as far as world history, geopolitics, any of that stuff, he is just, I have forgotten more than I think Trump has ever known. So he's in a bad way simply because back just prior to the fall of the former Soviet Union, Reagan and then later George Herbert Walker Bush spent those poor bastards right straight into the poorhouse in an effort to make them try to keep up with the trillions of dollars that we were spending on defense matters, okay? Because we were using IOUs. Those poor bastards, were relegated to using real money in most instances. And as history has shown us, they couldn't afford it, and they folded. They were like, holding a bad hand of cards in a card game, okay? But since then, one of the changes that has occurred in the former Soviet Union is the fact that businesses and industry and investment and international fat stacks of cash have been injected into their realm, Putin's realm, so that the playing field is different today than it was 25 years ago leading up to the collapse of the Soviet Union. So unless Trump is willing to deficit spend America, ourselves, into the poorhouse, it's going to be a different game altogether. But again, this is shit that he doesn't know, has absolutely no grasp or appreciation of.
Well, I think that last part is rock solid.
Yeah.
I got a hard time. Your Christian upbringing apparently stuck with you better than mine did. I got a real hard time feeling sorry for Trump.
I feel sorry for Trump, he is not up to the game. Okay, if the game is to be a positive, effective, beneficial president of the United States. And by extension, I feel sorry for the rest of us, and by further extension, the entire population of the planet. Because what is that line in the movie The Untouchables? I think it was the Sean Connery line. The poor bastard came to a gunfight with a knife, or words to that effect. He doesn't even have the knife. He's got a little plastic butter knife, if anything.
If anything. I sit around, Scott, and I think about this administration. Can you imagine a security clearance for racist Bannon?
Oh, God.
Well, that's going to happen.
Oh, I know.
He can't be special advisor to the president without a security clearance. And on top of that, it really wouldn't matter because, let's remember, Donald Trump is an open sewer. It'll be a minor miracle. Instead of being amazed at the fact that Donald Trump is not going to sit still for presidential daily briefings or America great-making reports again, maybe we should be relieved. Because he's an open sewer, and anything that he was told, based on the way he blabbed when he got his first briefing on the campaign trail, anything he gets told is going to go on Twitter. I mean, there are problems here. If, as Ron points out, you know, you've got career professionals who are really good at what they do, there have got to be hand-wringing and pearl-clutching sessions going on in the intelligence community, the likes of which we could scarcely conceive.
And it's worse than his Twitter fixation. How many steps down the road will it be? How far into the first term, maybe the only term, maybe the only partial term, will it be that the people who do have an understanding of these things decide that he's incapacitated and is removed from office? How long before that happens, and then what?
Well, see, that's that 25th Amendment stuff. It's 25th, right?
And
the problem with all of the constitutional safeguards is that they were written, whether it be the older stuff that was written by the actual framers or the more modern stuff, like the Presidential Succession Amendment, they were written by people at a time who made one fatal assumption. And that was that going forward, government would always operate in good faith.
Yeah.
That is not true anymore. For all of your optimism, Scott, and I'm not being mean here. I want an earnest assessment. Do you honestly think that the Republican House of Representatives that's going to come in January would ever, under any circumstance at all, convene an impeachment hearing against Donald Trump? I mean, I just said under any circumstance at all. I mean, let's say Donald Trump takes a pistol and goes and
shoots somebody on
shoots George Soros on live television.
Yeah.
Do you think the Republican House of Representatives that is coming into power in January would initiate impeachment proceedings against him? Or, based on what we've just said, let's say he tweets out some vital piece of national security. Do you think that Republican Congress would institute impeachment proceedings against him? And if you do, what gives you such hope?
Well, I don't know that I can wrap my head around a scenario. But it is helpful to have an appreciation of the distinction here, because Trump is a handful of cells in a petri dish, okay? Congress, the House of Representatives especially, is a massive culture colony in a huge petri dish that has been being what it is for many, many, many moons, okay? And like any life form, survival is the first law, okay? So anything that Trump did or didn't do that in any way threatens Congress's, the House's survival, yeah, there might be an instance where they'd throw him out. But who knows?
Let me add one more hypothetical, because I think this has a greater likelihood of being a real thing. We know that Trump is a serial adulterer. He's a serial philanderer. He's cheated on every wife he's ever had. Now, even though he's 70, what happens if he decides to make ficky fick with a woman not his wife? What if he grabs her by the pussy? Now, in the 1990s, a similarly insane Republican Congress impeached a sitting president over a consensual blowjob. Do you think the Congress coming in January would impeach Donald Trump for grabbing a woman by her genitals?
Well, I don't see how they could, because all during the campaign, that was a selling point. on behalf of the guy, okay, in favor of the guy, was the fact that he was our kind of man.
So you see the problem.
Oh yeah, I'm aware that there is a problem here. And I'm not as optimistic every day as you think. I mean, some days I am, and some days I look at it, and it hits me like the hot kiss of a fist in a leather glove, you know, right smack in the bridge of the nose.
Yeah, for me, it feels a lot more like that moment when you're not paying attention and you pull the kitchen cabinet door right out into your own head.
Yeah.
Or you've got the lift gate up on the back of the vehicle, and you step up and just drive your head right into the lip of the corner of the lip of the gate. And you start swearing in front of little children who think it's delightful, and then you realize, wait a minute, I'm swearing at a piece of metal over something I did to myself.
Yeah.
The thing is, I don't think the American people, at least a little over 25 million of them, have the perspicacity to realize that they have just pulled the cabinet door right out into their own heads, electorally speaking. But we got to get out of here, Scott, unfortunately. And hopefully we will talk at greater length again soon.
All right, Bob. Take care.
Later. Bye now. Bye, Punky.
Bye.
And so we're gone. Thanks, everybody, for participating this evening. Thank you, Janie. Thank you, Janie, very much indeed. Thanks to Janie and Angelica and our anonymous supporter of the resistance. We have finished fundraising for the evening, so we can go boldly into prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow with no hole to fill, which is just wonderful. Thank you, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, each and every one of you who spend your precious finite time with this program. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.